Okay, this morning we are going to do our second part on the intertestamental times, or intertestament times. It's the 400 years that a lot of people say are the silent times, when there's no prophecy from prophets any longer in the Old Testament. Malachi was the last, and we finished up Malachi. And now we're getting ready to start into Matthew, which should be the first one of the New Testament, the first gospel of the New Testament. Then we'll kind of jump around once we do Matthew and kind of get that under our belt. We've already done one other gospel, I believe. It's either Mark or Luke. But so we'll do that. Was it Mark? Okay. I've got it on a podcast. I just don't remember which one we did. So we'll do Matthew first, and then we'll probably skip around a little bit and hit some different things. Today I want to kind of give you an overview of what we covered just last week, just so that you kind of go back into the time period and understand what's coming up. But I also want you to understand what was happening in Judea and Jerusalem during Jesus' time. Stuff has happened. So they go into the Babylonian captivity, right? They come out of Babylonian captivity. And at that particular point, they realize we had to go into captivity. Why? Because we weren't doing what God... Idolatry. We weren't following God's law. Okay? Since we've covered the entire Old Testament, from Genesis to Malachi, did you ever hear the word Pharisee or Sadducee or Essene or Zealot
or synagogue?
Or synagogue.
Yeah.
Never heard any of those things during the Old Testament. Why?
Didn't start from Babylon, God.
They weren't around. Yeah. So they come out of Babylon, and those 50,000 that came out of Babylon and started building the wall with during that time, and they're reestablishing Jerusalem, they realized the reason we went into captivity was because we weren't following God's law. So, therefore, we start following God's law. And that's where the Pharisaical or the Pharisees come in, because they want to be, let's stick by the law, let's do what we're supposed to do. And we're going to get into that a little bit today, but I want to continue on with what we've got. So Persian domination. Persians in the remnants of the Jews come back from Babylon. The temple and the city walls are rebuilt. The Jews are under the Prussian rule, which was Babylon in that era, and they continue to fall away from God. Okay, so then the Greeks come in about 333, and they last about 166. And we talked about this last week about how Alexander comes in and he conquers this whole place, and then he dies at like 33 years old. And when he dies, it leaves a vacuum, a power vacuum. So there are four, I'm going over this very quickly, but there are four generals that assume that. And then the two biggest generals were the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. And the Ptolemies were in the southern part, and the Seleucids were in the northern part up around Iraq. So the Ptolemies had Egypt, and the Seleucids had Syria, and they battled back and forth, and their midpoint was right about Jerusalem. So they fought over Jerusalem quite a bit. Well, the Egyptians had them for a long, long time, and then finally the Seleucids came in. If you'll remember, Antiochus IV, he got beat, and he comes back and just ravages Jerusalem, kills a lot of people, goes into the temple, sets up an idol to Zeus. I know this is really quick, but I've covered this last week. He sets up an idol to Zeus. He sacrifices a pig. It's called the Abomination of Desolation, which is also a pretense or four-tenths of what's going to happen in the last days when that happens again. So he's a type of the Antichrist that we're seeing at that time, which we will see in the future. Anyway, he sacrifices a pig on the altar of Zeus, and that's where that all happened. And so this is where we're going to get into something new here, hopefully. I want to remind you again about the Old Testament, the Hebrew, the Greek. When Alexander conquered this entire land, he wanted everybody to speak Greek. He wanted everybody to be Greek. It's called the Hellenization of the entire world. And what happened was, that way they had a common language, and so they could communicate with trade and all that kind of stuff. Well, in so doing, there were more Jews in Alexandria, Egypt, you know, where the big library is and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so the guy who, the king, Pharaoh, whoever was down there, got 72 scholars, Hebrew scholars, to come down and translate their holy book into Greek. And so all those people that didn't read Hebrew could now read their own holy. So that really helped keep the Jewish people together. And Jesus quotes from the Septuagint. The 72 leaders write the Septuagint. So now we have the Old Testament in Greek. Now we go into the Hasmonean period. And that's 166. Antiochus Epiphanes desecrates the temple. He prevents the Jews from practicing their faith. You know, if they circumcised their child, he would kill the child, and he would kill the mother and hang the child around the mother's neck and all this horrible, horrible stuff. So he was just killing them left and right. Well,
this almost sounds like Antichrist.
In
the way the word is.
Oh, okay.
Antichrist. You know what it sounds like.
Okay.
It also means instead of.
Instead of.
Yeah.
So there was a time when they went out into all these little villages, and he comes to this one village, and they were setting up the temple of Zeus and said, you got to put a pig on it and all this kind of stuff. And this one guy, the patriarch of the Maccabees, said he wouldn't do it. And he was the priest in the town at that time. And so the leader says, you know, you've got to do this. And so somebody else, another smaller, younger gentleman of the congregation says, I'll do it, just to keep everybody from getting killed. When he stands up and starts walking toward the altar, this Maccabee guy kills him so he wouldn't desecrate the temple, and then turns and kills the soldiers that are there. So that starts a revolt. It's called the Maccabean Revolt. You can read about it in the Apocrypha. It's in 1st and 2nd Maccabees. It talks all about it. And I actually kind of recommend going ahead and reading that. It gives you all this history. But what essentially happens is you've got this one guy, he's got five sons. The third son down, Judas Maccabeus, the hammer, was what he was given by the people who had to fight against him. He starts a small guerrilla war, and in this guerrilla war, they send six. He had maybe 600 men. They send 6,000 against him. He defeats the Sennacheribs that are coming down. Then they send. By this time, he gets like 6,000, and they send 60,000 at him. He kills all of them. Kills every last one of them, and they keep sending. They send 100,000. He kills all of them. In the end, he backs himself up into Jerusalem because he goes, I can't defeat this last one. And when he does, they come after him. He holds up in there for a long time, a long period of time. And they finally, their whole dynasty is collapsing around them, so they pull back. And that starts the Hasmonean dynasty. This guy and his descendants become the priests and become the leaders of the Jews. Okay,
so all that him fighting all these men that you don't think he could really go against. Is there not anything about God? There's no silent at all. It's not anybody saying God was with you. God was with him. God.
Read Maccabees.
Okay.
Yes, it does. We don't. We believe that's apocryphal.
Okay.
But you're more than welcome to read it.
Okay.
And you probably should, for the historical value that's also in there, realizing that it was told from a Jewish perspective. It's where Hanukkah comes from.
Yeah.
Okay, they didn't have enough oil to keep the temple light burning, the menorah. Yet it was only supposed to last for a day, and it lasts for how many? 7, 12? I don't remember.
Eight days.
So it lasts for that long, and that's the miracle of Hanukkah. That comes from the Maccabean revolt. Now moving on, because I want to give you a little bit more of the political, we're at the Hasmonean dynasty. Well, during this time from, what do we got? Until 1963. Until the Beatles came on the scene. And until 63 B.C., then the Romans, who had also been helping the Ptolemies down in Egypt, they decide, hey, we're going to take over. They're a rising power, and they're taking down the Seleucids. They're taking down the Ptolemies. They're going to basically surround the entire Mediterranean. And in so doing, they're going to take Jerusalem. So the Hasmonean dynasty, the Seleucids had pulled out. Jerusalem was now being directed by this priest-king lineage. And these guys were the priests, they were the political powers, they were the rulers, they were all of this stuff during this particular time period. So the Romans come in and they capture, Pompey captures Jerusalem in 63 B.C. And Rome places a vassal king on the throne in Judah, Herod, who was not Jewish, he was half-Jewish. Okay? And he's appointed by Mark Anthony. Have I got that up there? It's not on this one. He was appointed by Mark Anthony, and he's in Rome, and they said, you're now going to be the king of the Jews. He goes, great. And they go, but you got to take it back from the people who are there already. So he has to go and fight against his own people and rout this dynasty that's already there. Now, Herod's the guy who's going to be in charge when Jesus shows up on the scene.
So Herod was only half-Jewish?
Half-Jewish.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
And he married a Hasmonean princess. I can't remember her. I've got it in here someplace, but I'm afraid if I start looking for things, I'll get
right,
lost. So he basically loved her. She hated him. Okay, so, but he was trying to get legitimacy because you're Jewish if your mother's Jewish.
Right.
So by having his children come from her, the Hasmonean dynasty, then they would have more legitimacy than he did. He felt like he wasn't Jewish enough. Okay. So, but every time he would go off to war, he would leave instructions that if he didn't return, they were to kill her. All the bodyguards were to kill her because he was very jealous and he didn't want her being with anybody else. So, I mean that's got to be...
That's real
exciting. Yeah, that's some true stuff going on. So, during this particular time, now I'm gonna bring... Well, let's make sure I've got all my history first. So, the Jews revolt against Rome in 66 B.C. Rome destroys Jerusalem in the Second Temple. Rome destroys the Second Temple in 70 A.D. We don't want to go there. Jesus is born and crucified. Priesthood is appointed, not hereditary. Where when we had the Maccabeans and all the Hasmoneans, it was hereditary. It came down. Now, it's kind of to the highest bidder. Okay? You would go to Rome and say, I want to be a priest. Yeah. When Herod comes in, Herod's in charge, right? He's the political leader of the Jews now. But you also had this priestly side. And so the priests had a lot of political power. And at that time, most of the priests were Sadducees. Okay, I'm going to give you here in just a second. I think we're probably there. There were several different groups that wielded power in Jerusalem during Jesus' time. I'm going to start with the top, the Sadducees. The Sadducees were made up the vast majority of the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin's the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Okay, 70-something people that were on this, and they made the civil and the religious laws. Mm-hmm. Herod comes in. No, you just make the religious laws. Mm-hmm. He's taking back the political control over the civil. Now, they can still have a lot of influence in there. So you got the Sadducees. The Sadducees were, I would think of them as kind of big business, very interested in making money and the political opportunities that were available to them through their power. So they would work with the Romans. They had a couple of different... Let me go someplace else here, too, so I can show you the difference between... Okay, yeah, this will help me.
They didn't believe in life after death.
Mainly made up of priests and aristocratic class. They were the city boys, okay? They had lots of money, that kind of... temple practices. They were based in the temple. Now, the Pharisees, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, established synagogues because everybody couldn't come to the temple. And so they wanted to teach people. So they established synagogues in all the different little communities. So in Glaville, you would have a church or a, quote, synagogue, and you would have maybe not a priest, but you would have a Pharisee. And this Pharisee was of a priestly class. He may not actually be a priest himself, yet he would teach. And he was a teacher. He was a rabbi. And he was the one that... These Pharisees were the ones who were influencing and teaching the common people. So the Sadducees, they did not believe in the resurrection of the body. They did not believe in angels and demons. And this is a religious joke.
They didn't believe. Sad, you see.
Yes. See, that's right.
So they were conservative in following the rule, God's rules.
The Sadducees only believed in the Torah.
Right.
Okay? If it was written, we follow it. That's really loose, too, because they're mainly...
But then they go and do things that are
they
wrong.
Do things, anyway. They say they're doing this, but they do wrong things all the time. And they're influenced by political power and by money and by status and by wanting to be the highest of the high. They like to be, as Jesus says, you like to be seen in high places. You like to sit in the great places. You were given... There's one in chapter 23 of Matthew, I think, where he just... I mean... oh my gosh, he just rails against the Pharisees and the Sadducees. It's like nothing you've ever heard before. And I got to hear it again with the guy that had the perfect inflection for it. And
kind of like a lot of us now. We and following the specific rules.
We all have pharisaical tendencies. We do things so that people can see it on the outside. We do things so that we look good before men. You know, hey, look, I'm a Sunday school teacher. I got to be good, right? On the outside, right? That's right, on the outside. So they also collaborated with the Romans, so because they wanted to stay in power. So they were kind of the political movers and shakers, and they were theologically conservative. And I've got down here city folks. Hold on. This is not going to... Oh, come on. Why is that not... Now my...
Lock up.
It locked up on me.
There you go.
I don't know how that happened. No, that's still the same thing. They didn't believe in the oral tradition. When I say the oral tradition, so both the Pharisees and the Sadducees had the Torah. They had the law, Genesis and all that. They had all this stuff. But the Pharisees started asking questions, kind of like we do. Well, what does that mean? You can't work on Sunday. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, you got to keep yourself pure on the Sabbath and not work. Well, how do you define that? And so they defined that. If you were a tailor, you couldn't have they always carried their needle around in their clothes, like right here on their lapel, that showed that they were a tailor. And what you couldn't walk out of your house with your needle in here because you were carrying around your tools. Right, you couldn't mend a broken leg. Had to wait till the next day.
Ouch.
Yeah. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of rules that you can't do, or what they interpreted. Now, that's an oral tradition. That's like we have, Fifth Sunday, bluegrass. We've done that for years. That's what we do. Well, it's not a law. It's not a commandment of God. It's something we do. It's a tradition. It's something we want to keep going. Or like the hymns we sing. Those are traditional. Those are things we feel comfortable with, and that's more like the Pharisees, not like the Sadducees. They did not do and they didn't believe in the resurrection of the dead, the immortality of the soul, didn't believe in angels, and they disappear after 70 AD. So they destroy the temple. They're temple-centric, right? They're not in the synagogue. They're not teaching. They're doing rituals. They're sacrificing and all that. So when the temple goes away in 70 AD, they go away. So do the Essenes. And I'll tell you about them here in a second. And the Pharisees. So here are the Pharisees and strict legalists. The law is incredibly important. From the middle class, they had a lot of influence during Jesus' time. These were the cobblers, the carpenters, the average Joe on the street. Yet they had taken to the point that they really wanted to be true Jews. And so they would stop at an appointed time. They would say their prayers continuously. They would, they may be walking down the street and they would stop in the middle of traffic and start saying their prayers because that was the appointed time. But what they were doing was really making sure that they were seen before men, not necessarily practicing what God had wanted them to do. Very, very legalistic. And that's what Jesus calls them on is the same thing that Isaiah says, that you're offering this to me, but you're not offering me your heart. You're just following the rules as they go. A lot of those were out in the countryside. They were ministering to people, and they figured if they could teach all the children and influence all the children, then they would be better Jews, and they would understand the law.
But at least they were trying to follow God's law, which is better than we've seen in the whole other rest of the Old Testament.
Exactly. But what God had set up with the Sadducees and the Pharisees and even the Essenes and the Zealots is to show you the tendency that you can follow God's law to the letter of the law and have no intention on following God. Because you haven't given up your heart. Their whole thing is, if I do this, I will be saved. No. You doing the law is not how you... It's a relationship you have with God, not the fact that you did something that God's going to like and reward you for it. That's not how you are saved. So Jesus is calling them on that. Jesus is most critical. I want to bring this out. We don't think about this all the time, but Jesus, when he starts his ministry, every single day he shows up, he punches in at 9 o'clock, if you want to say that, and hits the time clock. Who's there on the other side of him? You remember the wolf and the sheep in the old cartoons where they would check in and the sheep and the wolf would come after each other. This is the same kind of thing. He would show up and say, I'm going to preach. And there would be the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes going, okay, well, what do you think about this? Every single day. Can you imagine having a spiel that you want to do and say how great God is and how loving and kind, and they say, so what is the greatest commandment? Every single day they show up to press his buttons and to try to push Jesus. So after a while it gets to be kind of annoying. And because they're not coming to learn. They're not coming to find out what he knows other than Nicodemus and Gamaliel and a few of the other ones that wind up coming over to Jesus' side eventually. But the Pharisees, they believed in the resurrection of the body. They believed in the divine judgment of God, of the living and the dead. They believed in this oral interpretation of things that had been, that we talked about a little bit earlier. Jesus was generally wrong, and they were often in conflict with him, especially in regards to God's love and how one is to live their life. The Essenes, I'm going to go over these just basically. You've heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Well, the Essenes were so upset with how the Jews, both the priestly class and the Pharisees, were conducting themselves in the temple, they totally removed themselves. And so they were celibate, and they removed themselves from Jerusalem, and they went out in caves and hid, and were going to practice their rituals. Well, they were also celibate, which I've never thought was a great idea. If you're going to set up some kind of community, that you probably shouldn't be celibate. The Fakers did it. You know, the Essenes did it. So you got nobody to follow after you, because women weren't allowed. They were second-class citizens, so these were all men living out in caves. When we get the Dead Sea Scrolls, those are some of the oldest versions of the Old Testament, and they come from the Essenes, who were setting themselves apart. Okay, they also disappear after 70 AD. They believed those who taught in the temple were corrupt, so they withdrew to Quorum near the Dead Sea, completely separated themselves. They didn't marry, remained celibate, and bathed many times a day to try to remain as pure as possible. The Zealots, these are the guys, when Jesus says, or when Pontius Pilate says, you want to let Jesus go or you want to let Barabbas go, Barabbas was a zealot because he believed in a forceful overthrow of any occupying force, Romans, Greeks, whoever. Mm-hmm. They thought we should take up arms and we should kill them all. These are the Zealots. Began and led by Judas the Galilean, the Zealots believed that no foreign power had the right to collect taxes over the Jews and been given to the Holy Land. Between 66 and 70 AD, during the time of the first Jewish war against the Romans, the Zealots were armed, organized, and wanted to defeat and overthrow the Romans. And, of course, the Romans just said, okay, we're going to take down your city and your temple and everything else, and boom, away they go. There were other groups, bottom feeders. I love it. Had women as bottom feeders, just so you know. Different classes. I think that's all we've got. Okay. So let me see if I had anything else I wanted to show you on this. I know this is way too fast for you guys, but you're getting a sense of it anyway. Alexander the Great, we saw where Alexander went. I was going to use this earlier, the Seleucids and the Ptolemies, and the Seleucids and the Ptolemies. I showed you, this is a timeline of when the Persians, the Greeks, the Egyptians, the Syrians, the Jewish independent rule from Maccabee and the Hasmoneans was between 165 and 63 B.C., and then the Romans ruled from 63 B.C., so before Christ, 60-something years before Christ, until 650 A.D., when they started having to bring back, you know, the invading Huns, or, no, not the Huns, the... not Vandals, whatever.
Barbarians
are coming out of the north of Europe, coming down and causing them all kinds of problems.
Yeah, that's during the time of, what was the last king? Some of the barbarians came in to...
This is Rome. Yeah, this is Rome. We've already talked about the oral traditions. In 200... it's got CE, which is AD. It's common era is now the correct way to do that. The teaching of the oral law were written down so they would not be forgotten. The Talmud, which you've probably heard of before, actually there are two. The Jerusalem Talmud compiled around 400 CE and the Babylonian put together around 6th century CE is a compendium of the Mishnah, a written summary of the laws up to 220 CE. And these are the things that were the oral tradition, you know, the you can't work on Sabbath, you can't do this, all of this stuff. They finally decided, hey, we better write this stuff down. Yep.
What's CE?
Common era.
A common era. So that's between, that's the 400 year period.
It's what you now, which I think we started in the 1960s calling it CE instead of AD and BC.
So this is
This is called the CE, which is the Common Era. Well, if you are Jewish, you would not call it AD and BC.
Right.
Okay.
The year of our Lord.
Common Era is the Christ.
Common Era. No, Common Era is present.
Okay.
Is present.
Okay.
So before the BC was that one is a BCE.
Yeah, before Common Era, before the Common Era and BC and the Common Era.
So it's uncommon era, BC.
Anyway, and then I think I just went over the. This is Herod, and remember Herod was half Jewish, and he was here during the time of Christ. He was also really appointed by the Romans, so he was going to do what the Romans had said, so he was in charge of all that. He also, I'm sorry,
that's a self nativity.
Herod, one of his greatest projects was the rebuilding of the temple. Right. Mm-hmm. This is a model of what that looked like, and you can see here the temple, obviously in the middle. You've got all this space where the pillars are on the outside. This is where the money changers would have been set up. Mm-hmm. In the shade, kind of underneath this place, you would come, you need to buy a dove, you need to buy some grain, da da da. That's where the money changers were, all around this area. We talked about this when we talked about the temple and how they had like fellowship hall over here, because you wanted to set up and, you know, have a big reunion, family reunion, that kind of stuff. You could do it at the temple. But this inner court is where the Holy of Holies is, and this outer court is just for Jews only. But all this around here, anybody can go into. Okay? It's the court of the Gentiles, which meant they could come in, and hopefully we could bring them in and proselytize to them. But until they were sanctified, then there's no way they could come in. I think I have basically covered everything that there is up to the time of Christ, and now you get some general idea as to why you have these, at least three. You also had the scribes. Now, the scribes were people who were learned, and they wrote down, they copied down the Torah, they copied down the law. Scribes could be both Pharisees or Sadducees. Pharisees could also be priests or not be priests. Sadducees could be priests or not be priests. So it's more of a political alliance than anything else. But Jesus had more trouble with the Pharisees because they were out where he was teaching. Mm-hmm. But when he would come into town, then he would come up against the Sadducees. And ultimately, those two got together and brought Jesus before the Sanhedrin, and so he was accused of heresy, of blasphemy, of saying he was the Son of God. And so they turned him over to Pontius Pilate, saying, hey, civilly, you should take him out. And he's like, well, you know, they pass it around to Herod and all these different people, saying, not us, we're not going to take him down because, you know, I don't really see that he's done anything. But remember, you had that division. You had the civil law, you had the religious law, and at some point they're afraid a riot's going to break out, so they wind up killing Jesus because the Sadducees and the Pharisees had so much political power that they were pretty much insisting on the crucifixion of Christ. Questions? Comments? Oh my gosh, it's at 10. I'm sorry.
I find it interesting, even though they call this a dead period, Jeremiah received from God all of this prophecy concerning, especially Rome. I mean, even though, so this is still divine by God, because Rome is the beast with the iron teeth.
And we looked at it last week when Daniel was talking about that.
Right. So it's all, you know.
Thank y'all.
Bye.